Good morning.
Good morning.
It's lovely to be with you today, so thank you. Now, I don't know about you, but I hate the sound of my alarm clock. I don't know if I've gotten a few nods there, especially this morning, I didn't like it. Because what I want to do is snuggle back down under the covers where it's warm, especially when it's dark, and just to stay where I am. But my alarm clock is there to give me a warning. It's warning me that if I don't get up now, or at least in the next 10 minutes, I'm going to be late. I'm either going to be late to come and share with you, or I'm going to be late for my own church, or for work, or for whatever activity I have for the day. So my alarm clock warns me that I can't stay in that little cozy nest any longer, that I actually need to get out of bed. And I was thinking that there are actually many different sorts of alarms in our day-to-day life. So as Bridget said, I work at Christian Aid, and I'm here to represent them this morning. And our office is in Waterloo, and on a Friday morning at 10 o'clock, they test the fire alarm. And we all ignore it because we know it's a test, but it serves a purpose to ensure the system is working in case it does need to warn us one day about an actual fire. I was talking to a friend this week. In fact, she was here at the wedding yesterday. How strange is that? But she was telling me about her friend who had had her house burgled in the last couple of weeks and how traumatic it was, and they'd been through all of their things. But some people have an alarm on their house, don't they? A burglar alarm. My parents have got one. I don't really know why. They haven't got much worth taking, bless them. But, some people like to put one on their house to feel secure, don't they? And that alarm will sound if there's an intruder, and hopefully your neighbours won't just ignore it, but will actually go and investigate what is happening. Or I wonder if you've ever been caught out, you've paid for your goods in the shop, you've paid for your item of clothing, but as you exit the shop and go past those, we call them detectors, and it goes woo 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 on your way out, and the security guard comes over to check your receipt, and that tag's been left on that jumper that you've just purchased, and you have to go and have it taken off. So there are lots of alarms, aren't there, in life, lots of things that warn us. And I was thinking, really, an alarm is a warning that things are not as they should be, or things cannot stay as they are. And in our Bible reading, we see there that there is a real warning. That first verse talks about don't hold back, but sound the trumpet. And in the Old Testament, when there's a reference to a trumpet, it's normally taken from the word shofar, which is talking about a trumpet that is made from a ram's horn. And that trumpet, although it can be used as a musical instrument, more often than not, it's actually used to sound an alarm. I was fortunate enough to go to Israel a couple of years ago, and I remember there was someone there in Jerusalem with one of these trumpets sounding it, and I don't know if you can picture that in your mind and the sound that it makes, but it's there to be an alarm, to warn people that things are not as they should be, or to make some sort of announcement, something is going to change. And looking in the Old Testament, I found a couple of incidents where such an instrument was used, a trumpet was used, and they're probably stories that you know yourself from the Bible. In Judges chapter 7, we see Gideon, and he had an army of just 300 men in the end. If you remember the story where he whittles down the men that he's going to take with him, and he has 300 men, and they attack the Midianite army, and there's 135,000 fighting men. But with his 300 men, they blow their trumpets, they sound an alarm, and they certainly make that sound and say, something's happening, something is about to change. And we know that through the power of God that they overcome the enemy. And Joshua 6 as well, if we think about Joshua and Jericho, and if you remember, they're circling round the city, and on the seventh day, as they complete their seventh sort of circuit of the city, the priests blow their horns, their trumpets, and the walls collapse. So in the Bible, we see that the trumpet is used to sound an alarm, to warn people of something, to tell people something is happening. And so why do we need an alarm then in Isaiah 58? What is it talking about? Why do they need to blow the trumpet? What is it? Well, an alarm is required here because of the state of the worship that God's people are bringing to God. Earlier on in the book, God has already exposed their sort of empty ritualistic worship. But here in this chapter, he's concentrating particularly on fasting and the fasting that people are taking part in. Now, it all seems on the outward appearance that everything is good. It talks about there in verse 2 that they're worshipping daily. And, you know, on the outside, they seem to be doing the things that are required for the fast and for worshipping God. And perhaps some of us are in that position ourselves this morning, or we've been there perhaps in the past, where on the outside, we're doing all the things that look good and that are expected of us, and perhaps are even fooling other people. But it appears here in Isaiah that it's a different situation is happening on the inside. And it says that they are, you know, showing how earnest they are by the inconvenience of a fast, that they are abstaining a little from food to make things look good. But actually, within their heart, they are rebelling against God. And their worship is not coming from a sincere and a humble heart. So everything's looking good on the outside. They appear to be doing what they should be doing, but within themselves, they're rebelling against God. You know, the fast should be a time of humbling themselves and looking at themselves, of self-examination in that sense. But instead, it tells us that they're quarrelling and fighting and pointing the finger at one another. And so in the sense of any prayers or worship offered to God is not heard in that sense, that it's unacceptable to God. It's not what he wants when his people fast. In fact, there's a huge disconnect from their actions that look good on the outside. There's a disconnect from what is happening in their heart. And that disconnect also means that how they are behaving towards one another and in their society, it's all disconnected from God's desire and what he would want from them. And we see in Isaiah 58 that God then describes the sort of fast day that he wants, the sort of fast day that is acceptable and pleasing to him. And this basically means that the people would look at themselves and reform their lives and change their behaviour. And so God paints this picture of what that would look like in society if people humbled themselves and worshipped him from sincere hearts. Then within that society, these sorts of activities would then happen. And he talks about the fact that any sort of bands of oppression or wickedness that have been tied on other people, that they would be loosened because people would start being respectful of one another and treating one another in a proper way. That where there are people that are poor and the servants and they're just carrying such a heavy burden, that actually that burden would be removed from them. It paints a picture where slavery is broken once and for all and nobody would have to be oppressed in that way again. And it just paints a picture of captives being released and of the poor having their debts paid, of food being given to the hungry, shelter and lodgings being given to the homeless, and those that are naked being clothed. And that is God's idea of a fast day in contrast to the fast day that the people are observing. And where there's been disconnection, God is really talking about connection from their sincere hearts, offering worship that is meaningful, and then changing society, flowing out of that relationship with God, their desire to change society and to behave properly with one another. And it talks there as well about people who worship in this way. It just paints a picture of how blessed they will be. Well, as you know, I work for Christian Aid, and I believe that the work that we are engaged in around the world is really a sort of the picture that God painted of a fast day is trying to address some of those issues of oppression and poverty, people that are hungry and naked. And that's really what Christian Aid are about, trying to bring those things in to communities throughout our world. There's so much that I could share with you this morning. We're working currently in over 40 countries in hundreds of different projects. So unless you've got a week, I better not tell you everything that we do. But I'm going to try and just share some snapshots of different projects across our world that we're engaged with. And I hope, as we've talked about the fast day and that picture, that you can see that connection of the work that we're trying to do. And before I share with you some of these projects, I'd also just like to share some other information with you that is particularly relevant to the first two projects. So I hope that makes sense. But basically, Christian Aid really believe that while there's unequal distribution of power, that we're never going to be able to end poverty, that that plays a huge part where power is abused in our world, that we see poverty. And the greatest inequality in the world is still between women and men. And I know perhaps in our society we don't feel that quite so much. But I've got some figures here. So across our world, 64% of the people who are illiterate are women. 20% of parliamentarians are women, so just 20%. And this is the one I find the most difficult to get my head around, that 66% of the world's work is carried out by women, and they receive only 10% of the income. 66%, ladies, of the work, and gentlemen, 66% of the world's work is carried out by women, and we only receive 10% of the world's income. That's shocking, isn't it? Anyway, if you want to have those facts in your mind as I just share with you quickly some of the projects we're currently involved in, and some of the projects that when you support us, the money that you raise is helping. So you can be assured as we quickly go through these that this is the sort of work you are financing. So first of all, this is a picture from Sierra Leone, and I want to tell you about a lady called Sawa. She lives in the Kanema district in eastern Sierra Leone with her two daughters. She was married for 18 years, and then her marriage collapsed because her husband left her for another woman. And she made numerous attempts to get her husband to contribute financially to her family. She said that the chief asked my husband to pay maintenance for all of us, but I refused this money because it just wasn't enough. And she's a teacher, so she's on a teacher's salary, but there's herself, her two daughters, and also a nephew and a stepson. And she said, my salary was not enough. I couldn't afford sufficient food and a well-balanced diet. Now, Christian Aid are working in Sierra Leone with partners Action Plus. And so Sawa went to Action Plus to get some help. And basically, Action Plus provided her with a lawyer, and she would not have been able to afford this herself. And they supported her through the process of legal action against her husband to get maintenance. The thing is, in the law in Sierra Leone, she is allowed to have maintenance from her husband, but it's being able to afford to have a lawyer and also understanding that that is her right. And that's what Action Plus do. They make especially women aware of their legal rights. And someone working for Action Plus said that they'd recently received a call from a chief, and he reported the case of a woman who was nearly beaten to death by her husband. And the interesting thing is that previously that wouldn't have been reported because they didn't realise it was illegal, and they didn't realise that they could take action against a man. They thought and believed that husbands had the right to beat their wives and withhold their food. So Action Plus are doing a lot of work in that community just to open people's eyes to what are their rights. Okay, we're going to Kenya. Thank you. There we are. And I'm sure that you're aware that in Kenya, mums and babies don't have the same sort of health care. And so in Narok County, we have a project based there. And in that area, only 30% of the population have access to maternal and child health care, and only 17% actually use that healthcare. There's extremely high maternal mortality rates, and children under five, there's huge growth, you know, stunting in growth because they're not receiving the proper food. A third of the population live in poverty. And there are a lot of cultural beliefs and traditions in that society that make a barrier between better healthcare. So most women choose to give birth in their village with the help of a traditional birth attendant, who is an elderly lady with no training at all. And then if something goes wrong, it's usually too late to transfer the mum to a clinic, and often results can be fatal. In this society, men dominate decisions around healthcare, and women have to ask permission to go to the hospital or to do anything around family planning. So our work in Kenya in this community is about educating not only the mums and the birth attendants, but also the men who, you know, who are respected and who have to seek, you know, that to be allowed to go to the hospital. So we're working there with three partners and with the local government to deliver a project that's giving immediate help with medicines and medical equipment and ambulances, and we're also building two new maternity wards. Okay, we're off to Lebanon, and this little cute girl is called Zainab, and she's 2 years old, but she's still the size of a baby, and that's partly due to her Down syndrome, but also just the conditions that she's living in. She's a refugee from Syria, so she's in Lebanon. And she lives in a tent with her parents and three brothers, which in the summer is like an oven, and in the winter is absolutely freezing. There's just mud everywhere in the winter. After she was born, it was 8 months before she was diagnosed, and very little help was given to her parents and to Zainab. And Christian Aid have a partner working in Lebanon who work particularly with people with disabilities. And she's been able to have physiotherapy, and this has enabled her to sit unsupported for the first time. And she's just so cute, isn't she? I'm going to give her a big hug. Okay, and then still in Lebanon, but a different person. This is Abu Ali, and he was in the second year of a law degree when a bomb hit his house when he was actually studying inside his house. He was badly burnt, and he ended up with a piece of shrapnel in his spine, which paralyzed him from the waist down. There was a hospital, but he wasn't able to go and seek any help, medical help, because he lived in an anti-government area, and particularly young men, if they go to the hospital to ask for help, they can easily be accused of being part of the opposition and can actually be arrested or killed. So even though it was there, it wasn't safe for him to access it. So in fear of his life, his father took him to Lebanon, where they now live in this tiny metal container. It's just big enough for the bed that Abu can't leave. And next to him, there's just about enough space for his father to sleep. And the rest of their family are still in Syria. And his father says, just here in the camp, there are so many wounded. One has lost her eyes, another an arm, another a leg. There are so many catastrophes as a consequence of the war. And up to now, more than 1 million Syrians have been injured in the conflict. And while globally the average proportion of the population with a disability is 15%, among Syrian refugees that's 22% have some form of impairment. So the work that Christian Aid's partner is doing there with people with disabilities is really needed. And Abu was able to have physiotherapy, and that has enabled him to regain some strength and coordination in his arms and his trunk. And then lastly, I'm going to take you to Haiti, because that just seems like we cannot not think about Haiti this morning. Christian Aid are currently providing urgently needed shelter, drinking water and supplies. And through our partner there, we're distributing 500 hygiene kits, 500 shelter kits, 500 food kits, and also roofing materials so far for up to 62 families. And Christian Aid have actually been working in Haiti for nearly 20 years. And so we've already helped people in those communities. And actually, before Hurricane Matthew hit, our partners there were able to evacuate some people. So they were able to help even before the hurricane brought the devastation. But I do want to say thank you to your church for supporting us long term. I know each year that you do. And this enables us to continue some of the essential work that I've just shared with you. And there's so much more that we do. But as you partner, I believe together that we start to, in a small way, fulfill that picture that we saw in Isaiah 58, the desire of God's heart for oppression and poverty to be gone, for people to be fed, for people to be given shelter. And I believe working in this way to relieve oppression and poverty really is pleasing and acceptable to God. I guess as I finish this morning, it's just a warning for myself and for us too that, you know, our good works, whether it's with Christian Aid or other organisations, that it needs to flow from that heart of humility and sincerity. Yes, if we give money and our heart isn't humble, yes, it will be used, but it's true and proper worship and it's pleasing to God if we do it from a heart that is sincere and humble. And perhaps this morning we may need to examine our own hearts and see, do we have an attitude like the people in Isaiah 58? Or, you know, do we need to humble ourselves in any way? Do our actions or our attitudes in our day-to-day life, do we oppress people in any way at all? Is there anything that God is saying to us? Are we doing everything we can as individuals, as churches, as communities to alleviate poverty and oppression? You know, could we do more through Christian Aid or through any other organisation? So I guess as I finished, I just want to thank you for your partnership and just to challenge all of us just to say, you know, is our worship really true and pleasing and acceptable to God? Thank you.